From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A lone Army Staff Sergeant's alleged massacre last weekend of 16 Afghan civilians may be just a terrible, terrible moment in the larger story of America's long war in Afghanistan. But it sure feels this week like the straw, the horror, breaking the camel's back. The debate now in Washington is not do we stay or go, but how fast can we get out? Can we get out even faster than planned? And is there any real plan to keep that country from going into full-tilt chaos after U.S. forces pull up stakes? This hour On Point, getting out of Afghanistan without leaving a catastrophe behind. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta in Kabul today on a mission long planned but not publicized. He's there now. On the way in, he's saying that the death penalty could be a consideration in the case of the killings in Afghanistan over the weekend. Here he was on a plane en route to Kabul, to the region, on Monday.
War is hell. These kinds of events and incidents are going to take place. They've taken place in any war. They're terrible events. And this is not the first of those events, and it probably won't be the last.
Terrible events indeed there, Leon Panetta. Let's go right to Kabul. Laura King is Kabul bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times. She joins us from Kabul. Laura, thank you so much for being with us. What is the defense secretary doing in Afghanistan today?
Well, today he was in Helmand province, which is in southern Afghanistan and the neighboring province to where the shooting event took place over the weekend. He met there with tribal leaders, the governor, and tried to assure them that the U.S.
Laura King in Kabul. We may have lost her. We'll try and get her back there. Laura King with the Los Angeles Times. The lines to Kabul, always tricky, and U.S. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta there today. In the days since the killing, the shootings over the weekend, U.S. Army Staff Sergeant allegedly went out in the middle of the night. Did it? Women, children burned a lot of the bodies. Alleged. We have yet to see all of this put to real investigation. There has been so much talk about it. Talk about how long the U.S. should stay and what happens when the U.S., NATO, goes. Here's the President Obama yesterday in the Rose Garden promising this country and the world that his administration does have a plan to bring the war to a close responsibly.
Make no mistake. We have a strategy that will allow us to responsibly wind down this war. We're steadily transitioning to the Afghans who are moving into the lead. And that's going to allow us to bring our troops home.
And moments later, he drove that point home again.
There's no question that we face a difficult challenge in Afghanistan, but I'm confident that we can continue the work of meeting our objectives, protecting our country, and responsibly bringing this war to a close.
But there is real doubt about that this week on Fox News Sunday. On the GOP side, candidate Newt Gingrich said, predicting that the mission to Afghanistan will prove to have been an impossible one, he was talking.
I think it's very likely that we have tragically lost the lives and suffered injuries to a considerable number of young Americans on a mission that we're going to discover is not doable.
Not doable. That is a tough phrase after everything that's been invested in Afghanistan. We've got Laura King back in Kabul. Laura, do you know, there is word out of Washington that the Obama administration is talking about whether the planned withdrawal, the surge troops coming out this year and then all out by the end of 2014, whether the elements within that might be speeded up. Are you hearing any echo of that conversation in Kabul, Laura?
Well, certainly Secretary Panetta, in his visit, was trying to damp down any speculation about that, assuring local leaders that the U.S. role and mission were on track. And certainly the military commanders here on the ground believe that too precipitous a withdrawal could really lead to a dangerous situation.
We know what fierce pushback and outrage there was in Afghanistan after the burnings of the Quran. U.S. soldiers killed by Afghans, even in the defense ministry there. What about in the aftermath of this large killing over the weekend? Afghanistan seems to have been more quiet, Laura. Is that the case?
Well, I would not take that as a lack of anger. I mean, there was tremendous anger and grief here over the incident. But I think that with the Quran burning protests, which became very violent, there was just a sense that everything had kind of spun out of control. And I think that this time around, President Karzai, others in his administration, local leaders did everything they could to kind of tamp down the passions and assure people that one way or another justice would be done, and ask for their patience and ask them not to turn out in violent riots.
Laura, we're going to be talking in this hour about the big stakes here and the big options, but just give us your gut check, your reality check. I mean, you're there on the ground, sometimes watching from the U.S. It can seem as though the U.S. presence, NATO presence, is kind of coming undone. Those killings right inside the defense ministry. U.S. troops asked today to leave their guns at the door when they talk with Leon Panetta. Unprecedented, I think. Does it feel like this effort is coming undone, or steady as she goes?
Well, I think there's a lot of mistrust on both sides. I think that foreigners, whether they're in the military or civilian advisors, are a little bit nervous now when they are in dealings with their Afghan counterparts. And certainly, as I mentioned, you know, there is a lot of public anger on the part of Afghans, even though it didn't manifest itself in riots this time. There is just this sense of real weariness with civilian deaths.
Laura King with the Los Angeles Times in Kabul. Thank you very much for being with us, Laura.
Thank you.
Here's President Obama again. This is on Monday, the day after news came of the massacre outside Kandahar. Talking with Los Angeles TV station KABC, and he had two messages here. One, that American justice for the alleged killer would be tough, severe. And two, that the massacre would not force a change in U.S. plans in Afghanistan.
We treat the death of Afghan civilians like this the same way we treat a series of deaths here in the United States, and we will bring the full weight of the law to bear. In terms of our broader strategy, it is still important for us to make sure that as we transition to Afghan lead, we don't rush for the exits in a way that could end up leading to more chaos and more disaster.
No rush for the exits, says the president there, but there are calls for the U.S. and NATO troops to get out sooner than planned. We're going to go now we're going to hear in this hour from a U.S. congressman who says, forget it, let's just get out. And in a few moments, we'll be joined by Pakistani journalist Ahmed Rashid. But first, I want to turn to Thomas Johnson, director of the Program for Culture and Conflict Studies at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California. He travels regularly to Central and South Asia. Thomas Johnson, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
You wrote a couple of years ago now, you imagined how this might all end, and it sounded kind of like a Saigon scramble that you anticipated for U.S. troops getting out of Kabul. You talked about Kabul Station, the CIA signing off. You were predicting this sort of imagining it in the summer of 2012, and station embassy personnel have destroyed classified documents. The Taliban takeover is imminent. Helicopters are inbound for the final evacuation of remaining personnel and Marines. This was just your kind of fever dream of how this might end. Are we closer to that? Where are we headed?
Well, that was an op-ed piece written mm-hmm. for the San Francisco Chronicle, and some of that was based on, you know, fiction, obviously. But I thought even at that time we were basically losing the country one Pashtun village at a time. And I'm very concerned that the ultimate legacy of Operation Enduring Freedom might very well be a protracted Afghan civil war pitting various ethno-linguistic groups against one another. So I'm very, very concerned with what's going on in the country right now.
We've talked here over the years with Rory Stewart, the British diplomat, soldier, who spent a lot of time in Afghanistan, and he's saying, you know what, it's just time to go. Let's be out by the end. Let's get going by the end of 2012, this year. Let's get going. Is that your call?
Yeah, I mean, I've spent the most of the last decade in my professional life trying to win this war, but I think that it's unwinnable. I think that we should speed up our withdrawal right now. I think the longer that we stay, the more problems are going to be caused. I think that we've worn out our welcome. I think most Afghans will smile at you, but they don't like us. They view themselves. They view us as being an occupying force, and I think that's just a deadly thing to be viewed at in Afghanistan.
We're going to talk about whether the direst aftermath of a pullout can be avoided, but what are the scenarios that people worry about on the other side of NATO-U.S. presence?
Well, I mean, the The worst-case scenario, of course, is that after we pull out, there'll be a north-south civil war that'll look much like what happened after the Mujahideen took power in the early 1990s and the Taliban came to power in 94 or 96. There was a civil war that lasted through 2000, basically north versus the south. And I think and it pitted different ethno-linguistic groups against one another, basically the Pashtuns versus the northern ethnicities of the Tajiks, the Hazaras, and the Uzbeks and others. So I think that's the real fear. And what makes this even a more scary scenario is there's all kinds of regional and international interlopers that could take a side. For example, the North could be supported by Russia and Iran, and the Taliban fighting these northern ethnicities could be supported by Pakistan and China. That's the worst case scenario, because you could basically have a proxy war between India and Pakistan in the very volatile area of South Asia.
Thomas Johnson joins us from the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California. In just a moment, we'll be joined by Ahmed Rashid. A little sound of response to what we've heard just in these last days. Here's Secretary of State Hillary Clinton talking to reporters on Monday. This was at the UN in New York about the shooting over the weekend. 16 Afghan civilians, women, children, what she called the inexplicable tragedy in Afghanistan.
We've had a difficult and complex few weeks in Afghanistan. That is obvious to everyone. This terrible incident does not change our steadfast dedication to protecting the Afghan people and to doing everything we can to help build a strong and stable Afghanistan.
Difficult and complex few weeks, to say the least, maybe few years. 11 of the 16 people killed on Sunday, allegedly by the U.S. Staff Sergeant, belonged to the family of a man named Abdul Samad. You may have seen his photo all over. In his turban, an older man, he had brought his large family back home to that village in Panjwayi, after years away, because that area finally seemed safe again. Here's the sound of him speaking via satellite phone. You may have seen the image of this. It's been in the newspapers, on the web, to Afghan president from the village, to Afghan President Hamid Karzai, appealing to him to do something about those Americans.
President Karzai, sir, you always say that Americans shouldn't raid our homes, yet this isn't the first time. And they've killed 11 in one house, 4 in the other house, and 1 in another house. They destroyed our houses. For God's sake, it's dishonesty with this country. We elected you, but what security have you provided us?
What security have you provided us, and what about those Americans? Here's Newt Gingrich again. This is after the Koran burning. He was in Nashville reacting to news later that Afghan six servicemen had been killed by Afghans in retaliation for the Koran burning.
This is a real problem. And there's some problems what you have to do is say, you know, you're going to have to figure out how to live your own miserable life.
Live your own miserable life, i.e. bring the troops home. Thomas Johnson, stand by there in California. Ahmed Rashid joins us now from Berkeley, California. Pakistani journalist, best-selling author. His new book is Pakistan on the Brink, The Future of America, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. Ahmed Rashid, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
The conversation in the U.S. these days is, you know, all right, there's the schedule that's been laid out for withdrawal, but could it be done more quickly? Should it be done more quickly? What do you say, Ahmed?
Well, I'm hearing this, certainly, but I do believe that President Obama is not going to speed things up until at least there has been one major effort to talk to the Taliban and bring this war to an end. I think it'll be extremely dangerous if the Americans leave Afghanistan without first attempting to do two things. One is to broker some kind of peace deal between President Karzai and the Taliban so that the violence is reduced, so that the civil war does not continue in its present shape or form, and that you don't have to rely on the Afghan army and police to fight the Taliban in the same way as the Americans have been fighting the Taliban. And I think the second thing is that there will have to be greater effort towards a regional pact. In other words, bringing the regional countries, the neighboring six neighbors of Afghanistan together onto a table and getting them to renounce any interference in Afghanistan's affairs and letting the country work itself out without having these regional powers supporting one or the other proxies inside the country.
We'll talk about how that might be done, but let us really understand the stakes here. You say it would be extremely dangerous to go before those deals are made. What kind of danger if those deals aren't made?
Well, I mean, the consequences would be catastrophic. Simply, if the war continues without American soldiers there, I don't see the government lasting very long, maybe 6 months to a year, because the Taliban are ultimately stronger than the government. And although there is an army of and police forces of 300,000 men, they are very unreliable. Many of them will desert to the Taliban. Many of them will, go back to their villages, will not fight. They're not very reliable. And the second part of this is that the neighboring states, once they see the Americans go, and once they see that there's no deal in place, they will resume their interference in Afghanistan, which, of course, they did in the 1990s, which fueled the civil war at that time. And that means that Pakistan, Iran, China, the Central Asian republics will back this or that warlord, this or that ethnic group, which has, of course, the potential of creating a really serious civil war, as we had in the 90s.
But Thomas Johnson, you heard Newt Gingrich there saying, this may be undoable, and at some point, I mean, this is pretty hard, but saying there's a limit to what the U.S. and NATO can do, at some point leave them to their own miserable life. The implication, Thomas Johnson, that it would be their problem, quote-unquote, not ours.
Well, I think there's something to be said about that. I think that ultimately we're going to have an Afghan solution to this situation. And I just don't think that the next 2 years we're going to see much change in the Afghan National Security Forces getting any stronger. I think that what happens the minute the internationals leave, I think the country falls apart. I mean, as was suggested, the desertion rate of the Afghan National Security Forces is quite high. That's in the Afghan National Army. And in many places in the country, the Afghan National Police is a hated institution because they're basically an extractive institution. So I don't have a lot of faith that we're going to be able to put the mechanisms in place in the next year and a half or 2 years by 2014 to be able to avert a disaster. And I mean, my real fear is that we have a protracted civil war and it becomes a proxy war between, and this is the worst case, of course, a proxy war between India and Pakistan.
What does that mean for the U.S. if that should happen? I mean, some people at this point, after 10 years plus of war, may say, that sounds terrible, but at least it's over there and we wouldn't be.
Well, I mean, with the type of armaments that exist, in South Asia, it would just be a very dangerous situation. And Pakistan and India have both been pricking each other's behindsides for the last 10 years relative to Afghanistan. So I'm just very concerned about regional and international interlopers getting involved in any type of protracted civil war.
Ahmed Rashid is writing in his new book, Pakistan on the Brink, and he's saying today, do not go without a peace deal, first of all, with the Taliban so that they don't just swoop right in and take Karzai out. You know, stay in, keep the leverage there to make that deal. What do you say, Thomas Johnson?
Well, I just think that, sincere peace talks with the Taliban borders on delusional thinking. And I have no faith that anything is going to come out of these. I think that that's not to suggest we shouldn't try to talk to them. But I mean, the Taliban are extremely emboldened. They know we're leaving in 2014. They're willing to fight for another 50 years. What are they going to give up? I just don't buy this. They feel that they're weakened. And while there has been some security positions strengthened recently in the south of the country, I think the Taliban knows that once the international leaves, they can come right back in. So I don't have any faith in the peace talks. I think that they're basically interested in pre-withdrawal concessions, not a settlement, and it's even a question of who do we speak to when we're talking to the Taliban. Let's not forget, a year and a half ago, we spent a lot of time talking to a person we thought was Mullah Mansoor, an important person in the Taliban, who turned out to be a cobbler from Baluchistan.
Let's just review what's on the table. The plans as it stands now, the U.S. has just under 90,000 troops there. The surge troops supposed to be coming back, another 22,000 of them home by September. Then there's no schedule for the withdrawal of the remaining 68,000 troops, so to be out by the end of 2014. President Obama has said, at a steady pace, the military would like to keep them there all the way to the end and maybe some beyond that. Ahmed Rashid, how important are those troops for a deal with the Taliban? I mean, some are saying, well, let's at least speed up the withdrawal. Some are even saying, having all those troops there is actually making this tougher to resolve.
Well, I think obviously if the Taliban see that Western forces are panicking and that this withdrawal then becomes a run for the exits, by 2013, then obviously the negotiations will be very difficult, and they will up their demands, etc. If, however, there is a reasonable timetable, Obama sticks to the 2014 timetable, that at least gives the negotiators, the American negotiators, some kind of leverage with the Taliban. And to say that, we're not running for the exits, we're not running away, we need a good deal before we leave. So certainly there's going to be a lot of angst and heart-wringing about what's happened and the fears, etc., of things that could happen. But I am essentially convinced that I don't see the administration changing the timetable too drastically. And even though there's a lot of pressure it's facing from its European allies, from NATO, we've just had David Cameron, the British Prime Minister, probably asking Obama to speed up the process of leaving because British troops are under a lot of domestic pressure to leave as soon as possible, as are the Europeans. But, I don't see Obama doing this because I think, the situation doesn't warrant it. And secondly, the military, the U.S. military, is still going to be demanding time to deal with the Taliban and to evacuate.
Not to mention the president doesn't want chaos, presumably, before a November election here. But, it's been looking pretty chaotic just in the last couple of weeks, as the Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says there. Ahmed Rashid, his new book is Pakistan on the Brink. Please stand by there in Berkeley. And Thomas Johnson, we have a lot of callers here. Haroon in Gainesville, Florida. Haroon, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, everyone. I'm actually of Afghan descent, and I lived in Pakistan for a little while as well. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I want to point out that, we went into Afghanistan and Iraq to fight Al-Qaeda and these terrorist groups, Taliban. But, one of the main things that the U.S. government feared, which was the spread of Islamic extremism, has actually gotten worse since the invasion. You look at the number of suicide bombings that took place in Pakistan before the invasion of Afghanistan, and you look at it now, it's become part of a daily routine for most Pakistanis, as well as Afghans, Iraqis, and now Yemen and soon to be Syria.
So, Haroon, you know the place well. Should the U.S. get out? Should they stay in? Does the president have the right timetable, end of 2014? What do you think?
I don't think, defining timetables is the way to go, because in this part of the world, time stops. The Taliban has basically stated that they're willing to wait out the U.S. because the Taliban doesn't have campaigns and elections to worry about. So they'll wait out whether it was 2014 or 2024. They're there, pretty much for life in a way, you could say. And, I don't think you're going to have a real agreement and real control of the situation until we get all actors. And that includes Iran, no matter what people want to say about their nuclear program. That's a separate issue, but you're not going to have a regional agreement without a major player like that.
Boy, that sounds long and hard. Haroon, we've got so many callers here, but I appreciate yours. Let me get one more. Thank you, Haroon. Miles in Mount Sterling, Kentucky. Miles, you're on.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I couldn't agree with Haroon anymore. And you all have covered a lot of my talking points while I've been waiting. But I find myself in rare agreement with Newt Gingrich, and I mean rare, when he says that this is undoable. We broke this thing, or President Bush broke this thing, and I don't think there's any, putting the jack back in the box.
Well, I don't know when it was broken. Things have been broken for a long time. The Soviets had their time there. It's been a long time of war.
Thousands of years.
But what about the fear of even a regional, of a civil war there, even a bigger regional conflict, lots of players involved? Does that make you pause on the exit button, Miles, or not?
Well, it does, but I think it's inevitable any way you go. Like you just mentioned, Russia had their go, then they left, then we had civil war. Then we went in, and when we leave, it's just going to revert back, and it's regrettable and it's horrific, and the consequences could be broad-reaching. But I don't see how we can fix it. Timetables, I think.
Yeah, Miles, we've got. New CNN poll says 60% of Americans want out, and you seem to be kind of voicing that right there. And I appreciate your call very much, Ahmed Rashid. You hear that urge and that resonance with Newt Gingrich's "It's undoable." What would give Americans faith that this you know, that the goals you're saying, peace talks with Taliban, a deal with the Taliban, a regional deal, what would give Americans faith that those are doable goals, Ahmed?
Well, there has to be progress in the talks, without a doubt. I mean, these talks have been going on for a year now. They've been very slow, stop-go. They haven't been consistent. Right now, they're stuck on this issue of prisoners. Americans have been asked by the Taliban to release five of their prisoners from Guantanamo Bay, and in turn, the Americans will ask the Taliban to release one U.S. soldier who's in the hands of the Taliban. Now, if this prisoner exchange was to take place quickly, we could then follow this up with more meetings, which would now set new benchmarks for confidence-building measures, or CBMs as they're called, between the two sides. And these could result perhaps in a reduction of the violence. The Americans could promise to reduce the violence in some areas, the Taliban in other areas, and we could see this gradual reduction of violence in the months ahead, which could then lead to the next stage, which would be negotiations between President Karzai and the Taliban for the political future of Afghanistan. Now, I don't see President Obama running for the exit until this has been tried and until this means has been fully explored and whether, you know, the Taliban are really amenable to talks. I personally think they are. I've been meeting with the Taliban. They are very exhausted. They're very tired. They want to go home. They've dropped a lot of their jihadi rhetoric for a much more nationalist rhetoric. They insist that they have no links to Al-Qaeda, that they would never welcome back to Afghanistan any kind of non-Afghan group or terrorist group.
Do you believe it?
Yes, I do believe it, because I think they know which side their bread is buttered on. I mean, if they want to go home, if they want to escape the machinations and the manipulation of Pakistan, which gives them a very rough time because most of their leaders are in exile in Pakistan. If they want to escape that and go home to Afghanistan, then they know that they have to give some concessions. And I do believe that they want to go home.
Ahmed Rashid, author of the new book, Pakistan on the Brink, The Future of America, Pakistan and Afghanistan. Ahmed, thank you, as always, for being with us today. We're grateful. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thomas Johnson, we just got a few seconds before the break, but in a word, do you hear the music of a deal, the possibility of a deal in those confidence-building measures? Can we get there?
No, I don't think so. Wishful thinking aside, there's really no central political entity called the Taliban with whom to negotiate. I mean, it's a very fragmented organization. And I don't think the enemy or the Taliban is really interested in peace talks when they think that they're on the verge of a complete victory against a hated and infidel puppet regime and the American puppeteer. So I just don't see it happening.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about how to get out of Afghanistan without leaving a catastrophe behind. After last weekend's killing spree and the burning of the Qurans and more than a decade of war, how, when can we go, and what might be, will be left behind there? Thomas Johnson is with us from the Naval, U.S. Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California. We'll hear in just a moment from Representative Jim McGovern, who says, go. All kinds of comment here on the web. Let's see, what have we got? X-Ray says, how to leave, just pack up and leave now. Here's Josh. Here's his recipe. Just slip out the back, Jack. Make a new plan, Stan. Don't need to be coy, Roy. Hop on the bus, Gus. Just drop off the key lead. Set yourself free. A lot along that line. People also looking at everything that's been invested here. George is calling from Whitman, Massachusetts. George, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Tom, listen, as always, very interesting.
Thanks for calling. What do you think?
You just made reference to what is the right thing. I believe one of the right things that we can do in regard to what transpired this weekend is to let the soldier be tried in the Afghan courts in punishment to be carried out by the Afghans as to what they see fit.
I mean, Taliban says they want to behead him and anybody related to it. Are you saying just hand him over to what?
Hand them over to the Afghan courts, Tom. Let whatever transpires be tried and take place in Afghan. Therefore, I believe it shows that you are our equals. Otherwise, if he's brought back to the United States, it's once again the same thing.
Well, I mean, President Obama's saying we're going to treat this just as if this had been the murders of American children here. Thomas Johnson, is that going to be enough for Afghans? I mean, I can't see the U.S. military ever turning him over to Afghans, Afghan justice, but what do you say?
Well, I think it's an interesting concept. If there's one thing that Afghans hold very dear to their heart is the sense of justice. And let's not forget that a number of women and children were killed here in an honor-based society. So I think that your caller has a very interesting idea about letting this person be tried through the Afghan justice system, although there's problems with that we could talk about. But I don't think the American military would ever let that happen because it could set a very dangerous precedent. But I think it's very important for the Afghans to feel that this person, that the justice is brought about and this person gets what he deserves. So, but trying him in an Afghan court would be a very interesting idea.
Boy, it is hard to picture. And, of course, when you think that way, and as terrible as it is, a lot of Americans, especially military families, are going to be thinking of all the pressure the U.S. military people have been under. That is no justification, but the multiple tours that this staff sergeant and many others have served, it clearly takes a toll. I want to get a little taste of thinking in Washington right now. Of course, it's all over the place. But Representative Jim McGovern is with us. Democratic congressman, represents Massachusetts' 3rd District. He's a longtime proponent of getting out of Afghanistan. Congressman McGovern, thank you very much for being with us.
Happy to be with you.
How soon would you go?
As soon as possible. That would be my policy. If I were president of the United States, we would have been out of Afghanistan by now. People are talking about how do you avert a catastrophe. It already is a catastrophe. And I've been over there a couple of times. I've met with our troops. They're doing an incredible job. I mean, they are. We should be proud of the men and women who serve in our armed forces. But they're under enormous pressure, and they're in a situation that quite frankly, is not winnable from a military point of view. There's no military victory to be had in Afghanistan. If there is any kind of a political solution, and we should absolutely pursue that. But for how long are we going to be there militarily? We've already been there for over a decade. This is the longest war in our history. We've lost thousands of American lives. Thousands of soldiers have come back wounded. We're bankrupting our country. You know, enough. We went to Afghanistan to go after Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is no longer there. We got Osama bin Laden, not in Afghanistan, but in Pakistan, not with 100,000 American troops, but with a small group of well-trained Navy SEALs. Now we can't even define our mission in Afghanistan anymore. And we are, again, spending countless billions of dollars and throwing it away.
What about the president says don't go helter-skelter out of there. Don't rush for the exits. Your Democratic, this is Senate Majority Leader, but Harry Reid saying, I think we should stick by what we have. We're drawing down in Afghanistan. We should stick by the timeline. This idea of an orderly, come on, you know, let's not get, let's be orderly here.
Well, I'm all for a safe and orderly withdrawal of American forces. I don't think it needs to take as long as the president's timeline calls for, and I'm not quite sure, what happens, after 2014, mm-hmm. And what kind of military force that they want to leave in place. I think the U.S. military occupation of Afghanistan is more counterproductive now than helpful, and I don't think it is, going to be the deciding factor as to whether or not a negotiated settlement can be had in Afghanistan.
But why would the Taliban negotiate with Hamid Karzai if he's sitting there just waiting to be picked off?
Here's the other problem. The problem in Afghanistan is not just the Taliban. The problem in Afghanistan is also the government of Hamid Karzai, and he in particular, one of the most corrupt governments in the world. I mean, most Afghans don't have any confidence in this government. So that makes the problem even more complicated. So our men and women are over there dying to protect and prop up one of the most corrupt governments in the world. You know, American taxpayers are sending money over there to prop up a corrupt government, and a government that the Afghan people doesn't have a lot of confidence in. So this whole thing already is a catastrophe. We need to find a way to extricate ourselves from the situation. I think ultimately, if there's going to be a political solution, it's going to involve kind of a regional political solution. But I'm not sure whether there is the will, amongst all the necessary players there to move in that direction. But the one thing I do know for sure is keeping American forces there, you know, for you know, another year, 2 years, 3 years, or whatever, I think is a mistake.
We're reading here about the Afghan economy becoming a foreign aid-based economy, a lot of that money going to elites with contracts with NATO and others there, and billions per year pouring out of that country as they look for safe havens here. We're reading about big lines at the passport offices, the Afghan passport offices, of people anticipating bad stuff here and wanting to get out. But what about this, Jim McGovern, Congressman? Here's Senator Mitch McConnell. This is, of course, the Republican leader from Kentucky. He says, you know, it's been a difficult period, but he says it's important to remember the reason we went there and what happened when the Taliban was running the country. Maybe Karzai will fall. Maybe the Taliban will take over. And people remember what happened when it was a base for terrorism, Congressman.
Okay. Nobody's saying that we should take our eye off of Al-Qaeda. I mean, we went in there because of Al-Qaeda. That was the reason why we went to war in Afghanistan. And we have shown that there are ways to go after the enemy without having to occupy a country. So this notion that somehow, you know, we can't go after Al-Qaeda wherever it is in the world, you know, that's not real. Nobody's saying that. And nobody's saying that we should forget about the people of Afghanistan. But you know, we are now stuck in this quagmire where, you know, I don't see, you know, this is not a situation where Humphrey Bogart and Claude Rains are going to walk off into the night mist. There's no simple or easy solution here. But the one thing that people need to understand, the problem is not just the Taliban. The problem is also the very government we're supporting. It is corrupt. It is incompetent. And by any measure, you know, if it weren't that we were involved in this military operation, we would all be condemning that government.
Congressman Jim McGovern, please stand by there in Washington. And Thomas Johnson in California. Let's take a call from Charlotte in Cambridge, Vermont. Charlotte, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to address to both of your guests why we're not discussing the role of natural gas and oil as a factor in American troops being in Afghanistan, and specifically the TAPI pipeline, the Turkmen-Afghanistan-Pakistan-India pipeline, which was first described, at least the first time I read about it, was in Ahmed Rashid's book on the Taliban, and I'm sorry he's not here.
Mm-hmm.
But that is scheduled to be completed in 2014, the very time that troops are supposed to withdraw. If you look on a map and you see the route of this proposed pipeline, and then you see where troops have been stationed, the greatest concentration of troops is along that pipeline route, and it does traverse it. It's supposed to carry natural gas from the Caspian Sea across Afghanistan into Pakistan and eventually to India.
Charlotte, let us pick that up right there. But we know energy can have a huge strategic power behind it. Thomas Johnson, what about it? I mean, for years people have wondered about this, scratched their heads. Ahmed Rashid has written about it, as Charlotte says. Are U.S. troops in there waiting for a pipeline to be built and then sitting there to protect it?
Well, I think the Afghanistan, based on numerous studies, has mineral wealth, and the pipeline has been talked about for a long time. The problem is that pipeline is going through some very volatile areas, and in 2014, United States troops will be leaving, and if you buy my scenario, that there could be a protracted civil war. It's going to be very, very hard to be able to protect that pipeline. Pipelines, almost by nature, are very difficult to protect, so I think that's a real problem. But one of the things I think that we need to also talk about is what's the sustainment capability of Afghan national security forces. The World Bank has suggested that 97% of Afghanistan's approximate $28 billion gross domestic product is directly related to foreign military and development aid and in-country spending of foreign troops. That money's going to go away. And only one-third of Afghan government's $4.5 billion budget comes from internal resources. So how are we going to even maintain the Afghan national security forces that this year the United States is spending $11.5 billion on? I just think there's all kinds of problems with being able to keep that pipeline safe.
Congressman, I'll bring the resource question to you in just a moment, but let me get first, if I may, Tom Johnson, thanks. Patricia in Framingham, Massachusetts. Patricia, you're on the air.
Hi, Hi, Tom. My son arrived home in Framingham after his second tour in Afghanistan this past Saturday. He's on the front page of the Metro West newspaper this morning talking about this issue. He has to believe that the work he was doing over there is good and helpful. But what I'm not hearing on your show that is bothering me is what this man did over there is outrageous, no doubt about it. But he needs help. My son talks about in this article coming home with the scars of war.
Yeah.
This man needs help, and the thought of putting him on trial with the Taliban or handing him over to Afghanistan, that to me is just as outrageous. Put this war on trial and let people know that these men and women are coming home scarred. There's a cost to all of this, a very human cost.
Patricia, I so appreciate your call, and we're glad that your son is home and with you. Jim McGovern, I mean, you know, let's go to that. We've got all kinds of issues here, but we can never forget the people who are out there bearing the brunt of this. And Patricia says it is terrible what happened on. It is terrible
right.
what happened
and
on Sunday.
I want to thank Patricia for her call and honor her son's service as well, as I do all the men and women who are serving over there, not only in the military but also in the State Department and our civilian services. But look, this war has taken a terrible toll on our country, and as well as on the people of Afghanistan. We have soldiers coming home with severe traumatic stress. Suicide rates are at an all-time high. I've been to Walter Reed on a number of occasions. I've met with many of the wounded warriors who will require a lifetime of care. We are paying a heavy, heavy price for this war. And as a member of Congress, you know, I remind people all the time that those of us in Washington, those of us who are politicians, we're not the ones who are on the front line. We're not the ones who have to deal with what our men and women in uniform have to deal with every day, wondering whether or not an Afghan police officer or soldier, who their training might turn on them, not knowing what's going to happen next in terms of a roadside bomb. It is a terrible, terrible, terrible situation, and these men and women who are in multiple deployments, they are bearing the scars of this war, and it's something we need to be very, very, very concerned about. And even if this war ended today, you know, we're going to have to be there to help these men and women recover in years to come. But look, if this war were in our national security interest, I'd be the first one out there saying, you know, we ought to stay. But I don't believe it is in our national security interest. I think it's undercutting our national security. We are overstretched in terms of the number of troops we have all around the world and deployed in Afghanistan. And on top of that, this war is bankrupting us. We can't pay for health care in the United States. We're told we don't have money for roads and bridges, but yet we're trying to build roads and bridges in Afghanistan. You know, we're told that we need to be nation-building in Afghanistan. We need to do some nation-building here in the United States.
Congressman, let me get one more call, if I may. Kim in Pittsburgh. Kim, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I totally agree with your guest. We need to get out of Afghanistan now, as soon as possible. It's unwinnable. It's unsustainable. It's bankrupting us. And it's just a really, really, they have no mission anymore. We're just there because we're there. And I think we've accomplished everything we're ever going to accomplish in Afghanistan. And it doesn't matter if we leave now or 5 years from now. They're either going to take care of their own country or not.
So you say now, Kim, I appreciate that. Thomas Johnson, Leon Panetta says, war is hell, but we cannot allow these events to undermine our strategy to try and get out when things are better. Jim McGovern says, look, our national security interests are being harmed by staying. How do you look at it, Thomas Johnson?
Well, I'm not sure what our strategy is any longer in Afghanistan. I think that we've tended to have a different strategy with every new commander that's gone into the country. So rather than one sustained strategy, we've had 10 over the last decade. So I think that your caller hit it right, the nail right on the head. I mean, what is our mission? What is our strategy in Afghanistan? I've been studying the country for 30 years, and I can't really tell you. If in fact it is to make sure that al-Qaeda is not around, well, al-Qaeda is not in Afghanistan. They're in Pakistan. I mean, Admiral Mullins, when he was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff a year ago, said there might be 100 al-Qaeda left in the country. So if that is our real goal, then, you know, I just don't know what our strategy is.
Thomas Johnson at the U.S. Naval Postgraduate School, director of the Program for Culture and Conflict Studies there. Great as always to have you. Thank you very much for being with us today.
It's always a pleasure, Tom.
Congressman Jim McGovern, are the votes there to get out? They haven't been so far.
Well, we've come close in the past, and I think we may be getting there. Ultimately, this war is going to have to be ended by the President of the United States. And he's going to have to take the leadership and the responsibility to say enough is enough. And I hope he does that. I think the American people, you know, again, are way ahead of the White House and way ahead of Congress on this issue. They want this war to come to an end now, you know, not 2 years from now, but they want it to come to an end now. And my hope is that that we'll get there.
Massachusetts Congressman Jim McGovern, thank you very much for joining us today, Congressman.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, thanks for joining us today. You can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at On Point Radio. Thanks to Ahmed Rashid. Thanks to Laura King of the Los Angeles Times in Kabul. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.